Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. We are find ourselves on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Bet. That's 27b. We are on the last skinny line, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We have been talking about the possibility of selling a synagogue. In our previous recording, we mentioned that Rabbi Meir's view was that you could only sell a synagogue conditionally, that if later on the owners of the synagogue decided that they wanted to revoke the sale, they would be allowed to do so, and that way you never sold a synagogue for eternity. However, the sages disagree. The Chachamim say that you may do so, and that's on the last skinny line you'll see in between the two diamond dots. It quotes the Mishnah, V'chachamim omrim mochrim oto mimkar olam. The rabbis say you may sell a synagogue in perpetuity. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, first medium wide line. Mutar la'adam lahashtin mayim. It is permitted for a person to urinate. B'toch dalet amot shel tefila, within 4 cubits of prayer. Now, prayer and urinating don't go together. That's why we don't wear our talitot or our tefillin into the bathrooms. We don't say blessings in a bathroom. But here, what we're saying is that it is permissible for a person outside to urinate in a very close proximity to a place where one davens. Okay, let's investigate. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, "My kam mashmalan, what are you coming to teach us? Tanina, we've learned this already." Here's the source. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mochrin ota l'shum chatzer. You may sell a synagogue. This is from our Mishnah. You may sell a synagogue for the sake of a courtyard, l'shum chatzer. V'lokeach, and then the buyer, the purchaser, mashihirtze yaseh, what he wants to do with it, he can do with it. V'afilu, and the presumption there is that he can even make it into a latrine, which the rabbi said was not allowed. They said there were four things that were not respectful for synagogues, that you couldn't sell a synagogue to become a tannery, to become a latrine, to become, what were the other four? To become a bathhouse, and as a makom tefila, a place of immersion. However, Rabbi Yehuda seems to say that you can do with whatever you want to, which would mean even in this place that used to be a synagogue, you could urinate. V'afilu rabbanan, even the rabbis who said that you can't sell a synagogue in that way, lo ka amri, they didn't say it, ela beit hakneset, dekvia kiddushte, only regarding a synagogue that had an established kiddusha, meaning here you had a synagogue that you were going to sell to turn it into a courtyard and then into a latrine. They said that you're not allowed to do, because its holiness was already established. Aval dalet amot, but regarding going 4 cubits from a place that doesn't have an established holiness, low. In other words, if you're just davening mincha on a street corner, so to speak, you don't have to go 4 amot away in order to urinate. Luckily for us, we don't have these problems most of the time because we actually go to bathrooms to urinate, and so we keep our latrines very far separate from those places where we daven. The halacha, however, is that in a place that still smells of urine, generally speaking, we do not pray. Tani tanae tana kamed Rav Nachman. A teaching was taught in front of Rav Nachman. Hamit palel, one who prays, marchig dalet amot umashtin, he should go 4 amot away, 4 cubits away, and then urinate. Ve'amashtin, and the one who is urinating, marchig dalet amot umit palel, after he finishes urinating, he should go 4 cubits away and then pray. So in other words, even though in our previous teaching we said it's permissible to urinate within 4 cubits of where you pray, the proper practice, according to Rav Nachman, is to separate both from prayer to urination and vice versa with 4 amot. Amar Lei said to him, Bishlama, it makes sense, Hamashti marchik dalet amot umit palel, that once you're finished urinating, you should go 4 cubits away before you pray. Tanina, we learned that already. Kama yarchik mehen umina tzoa, how far should a person distance himself from tzoa is excrement. Dalet amot, he should go 4 cubits. Ella, so that makes sense. You should go four cubits away from excrement for sure to, before praying. Ella hamid palel marchik dalet amot umashtid lamali. But to tell me that once a person prayed that they have to go 4 amot before they urinate, why do I need that? Ihachi, if that were so, Kidashtinu Lukule Shvile Dinaharda, we would have, people apparently davened and urinated all over the town of Naharda. We would have, anytime someone prayed in any place in Naharda, it would have become established as holy. And you wouldn't be able to go anywhere in Naharda without being within 4 amot of a place where somebody had once davened. Tanei, so the teaching is, Yishaheh. It's not about actual distance, it's about time. In other words, once you're finished urinating, you should not pray right away. You should give it a little time to make sure that there isn't actual urine there, and also that any leftover droplets are gone or absorbed before praying. Bishlama, it makes sense, mashtin yishaheh kidei hiluch dalet amot, that after you urinate, you should wait for the period of time it would take you to walk 4 amot, so a few seconds, 3-4 seconds, mishum nitzotzo, because of the little droplets of urine that might still be around. Ela mipalel yishaheh kidei hiluch dalet amot lamali, but if one davens, why do they need to wait the period of time that it would take to walk 4 amot? What do I need that for? You wouldn't necessarily need that. There's no reason. Amar Ravashi explains, Shekol dalet amot tfilato sidura b'fiv, that for the period of time that it takes to watch 4 amot, which is just a few seconds, is a period of time that it takes someone to formulate a prayer. V'ruchushe mirachashan shivate. And sometimes a person starts to do the next thing even before they finished praying. So meaning like you're finishing the last pasuk of Aleinu and you already start unwrapping your tefillin or walking out of shul. So we want to give it a little time from the technical end of davening for you to finish saying your prayers before you move on to the next activity so that you're not urinating and davening at the same time. That takes us up to the two dots on the second wide line towards the bottom of the page. And we have here in between the two diamond dots what's called a siman. It's a memorization technique. And for the next section of Gemara, the way to remember what happens next is Zalpan. Zalpan stands for the name of 4 sages. We're going to have teachings in the names of Rabbi Zakkai, Reb Elazar, we take off the Aleph, so it's Lazar, the Lamed. Pei stands for Rav Preda, and Nun stands for Rabbi Nechunya. So we're going to do the first 2 of them in this recording and the next 2 in the next recording, but that's how you remember Zalpan, the order of the teachings. These teachings are unrelated to our topic, really, except that one of them is about urinating near a place of prayer. That's really the only connection. Shalu Tamidav et Rabbi Zakkai. The students asked Rabbi Zakkai, Bameh erachta yamim, to what do you attribute your long life? Now, this is a strange formulation. You know, there are 2 special mitzvot that talk about arichut yamim, long life. That is shiloach haken, setting away the mother bird before you take the eggs, and kibur avaim. So those are special mitzvot in a certain way that they contribute to long life, whether it means in this world or the next world. And perhaps their meaning here is, what is a particular mitzvah that you're proud of, that you think gives you zchut, merit, in the world to come? And the idea behind this would be not something that is obligatory, not something that every Jew has to do, but a certain practice that is above and beyond the law, that's lifni mishurat hadin, that you feel that is a real accomplishment, something that is a special mitzvah to you. I think that's what it means here. Amar lahem, so Rabbi Zakkai responded to them, and he gave them 3 mitzvot that he thought were special. Mi amai, my whole life, lo hishtanti mayim betoch dalet amot shel tefillah. I never urinated close to where I was davening, within 4 cubits. As we saw, it may be permitted to do so, but he was careful to put more distance between his bathroom activities and his shul activities. Number 2, velo kiniti shem lachave rai. I did not make nicknames for my friends. Now, certainly making an abusive nickname for someone is forbidden according to Jewish law, but an affectionate nickname, which many people use, and is actually an act of love often to have a special nickname for someone, he didn't do that either, because you never know when you think a nickname is appropriate or affectionate and another person really hates it. So he always would make sure to call them by their proper names. Velo bitalti kiddush hayom, and I never missed saying kiddush on Friday night, ever, basically. So those were 3 mitzvot that he was very careful about. Regarding the 3rd one, where he never missed a Friday night kiddush, he tells a story. Imaz kena haitalim, when my mother was an old woman, pam echat, one time, machra kipa sheberoshah, she sold her head covering, her hat. Vehevieli Kiddush Hayom, and she brought me the wine so that I could say Kiddush. Meaning, his mother knew that this was a mitzvah that he took so seriously that in a certain time when they didn't have wine to make Kiddush, she went, he didn't ask her to do this, but she wanted to take care of her son. She went and sold her head covering so that he could never have missed a opportunity to say Kiddush on Friday night. Tana, we have a teaching about the relationship between him and his mother. Kishemeta, when she died, he nichalo shlosh meod garbe yayin. She left him 300 bottles or skins of wine as a yerusha, as inheritance. Kishemedhu, when he, Rabbi Zakkai, died, he niach libanav, he left as an inheritance for his children, shloshet alafim garbe yayin, 3,000 flasks of wine. So obviously he did quite well. He increased tenfold the inheritance from his mother. Perhaps one of the reasons the Gemara seems to be suggesting why his wine cellar increased so much is because he was so scrupulous about saying Kiddush. Okay. Even his mother obviously went from a place where she had to sell her head covering to get a bottle of wine to a place where she had 300 bottles of wine in her cellar. Okay, we go on in a similar topic, still talking about Kiddush Hayom. Rav Huna, one time Rav Huna, Hava Asar Rita, he put around his waist a reed belt. Like he basically used like a plant to instead of a belt. V'kai kami de Rav, and then he was standing in front of Rav, and Rav was surprised that he was using this unusual belt, that he had repurposed a reed for a belt. Amar Le, my high, he said to him, what's going on? Why do you have this belt? Amar Le, he said to him, Lo have li chamra l'kidusha. You have to add the word chamra by the Hagos HaBach. I didn't have any wine for Kiddush. So he obviously also, Rav Huna, took this Kiddush Hayom very seriously as a mitzvah. Umashchante lehem yanai. And so I used my belt as a mashkon, as a collateral. And va'ate be kiddusha. And using it, I purchased wine for Kiddush so that I can make Kiddush. So, you know, and then he figured he'd get enough money to repurchase his belt later, but in the meantime, he had to hold his pants up using, a reed. And that's how serious he was about making sure that he had wine to say Kiddush. So, Rav was impressed with his dedication to Kiddush, and he gave him a bracha. Amar Le, he said to him, Yehei Rava, may it be his will, and may it be God's will, detitum bishirai, that you be swaddled in silk. That's basically what it means, which is a very strange blessing, but that, you know, that your dedication to this mitzvah, so such that you have to hold your pants up with a reed, will one day result in your being entirely covered in the most expensive garments possible, you know, that you won't need to use a cheap belt anymore. Ki ichlal, Rabba Brei Rav Huna. So when his son, Rabba, got married, so this was, Rav Huna got this blessing from Rav. So when his son, when Rav Huna's son was getting married, Inish Gutza Haya, he was a short person, he was a short man, Gana Apurya, and he was lying down on a certain bed. And I don't know what it means that he was short exactly, but I guess they couldn't see him or he didn't take up much room. So Atian Bante Vekalate, his daughters and his daughters-in-law came to where he was. Shulchan Vishadyan Minai Ale, and they took off their silk coverings, whatever they had, and they threw them on the bed, and so they were thrown on top of him. Adiitum Bishirai, until he was completely covered in silken garments. So that this blessing came true. Now, whether or not the blessing was that he should actually be swaddled in silk, or that it happened to be at a happy occasion when his son was getting married and it was connected to this, so maybe that was really the fulfillment of the blessing. But Shama Rav heard about the story that his blessing had come true. V'ikpad, and he actually got a little upset. He actually was upset at Rav Huna, and he said to him, Amar, said, my taima, what's the reason? Lo amarti li, why didn't you say to me, ki berachticha, when I blessed you, that you should be swaddled in silk, you should have said, v'chein lamar, and also to you. And then I also, it's such a good blessing, that I also could have been benefited from it. Now, I don't know if it's because Rav really felt like he needed to be swaddled in silk, or maybe he was also hoping for a happy occasion of a wedding, or something like that. Or perhaps he was just sending a message that when someone gives you a bracha, it's a nice thing to do to also give them a bracha, to turn around and wish them the same thing, not just to accept the blessing and not turn it around back to them. So he said, you should have said v'chein lamar. And this is something that we do, for instance, when, you know, you're always, who's the first person on the night of Rosh Hashanah to say l'shana tova tikateva tichateim? Whoever the first guy who says it is, the next guy says v'chein lamar, and also to you, instead of having to say the whole thing again. It's just polite behavior. Okay, the second one, so that's the first story. And although there were three mitzvot that were mentioned there, not urinating within four amot of tefillah and not calling friends by nicknames, the one that they focused on was being careful about Friday night Kiddush. So the same question was asked to Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua. Shalu talmidav et Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua, bameh arachta yamim. What do you attribute your length of days to? What's a mitzvah that you feel that you did that's very special? Two lines up from the bottom. Amar lahem, he said to them, mi amai, my whole life, lo asiti kapanderia lebeit hakneset. I never made shul into a shortcut. And there is such a halacha that you're not supposed to make a shortcut through shul. So you're not supposed to go into shul to protect yourself when it's raining or from the heat, and you're not supposed to take a shortcut through shul. There is like kind of an easy workaround on this. If you, for some reason, want to get from one place to the other, and shul is the shortest way to get there. So the rabbi would come in, and when he walked up to the lectern in the front of the Beit Midrash, it would look like he was stepping on the heads of all the students because they were all seated there. So he felt like this was disrespectful. I'm not sure how he solved it. Either he walked around them, or he came in before they came in, but he was careful not to make it look like he was walking on their heads. V'lo nasati kapai, and I never lifted up my hands, he was a Kohen, to bless the people below bracha. I never bless the people without saying the special bracha of the Kohanim. That one's a little bit strange because, of course, you make the bracha before you do the Kohanim blessing. Everybody does that. I'm not sure what's so special about that one. And the same thing is true of the shortcut to shul. It seems to be a plain halacha. The middle one certainly, at least, is a midat chasidut, a sort of an extra one to do. All right, so we'll do one more. Last line: Sha'alu tamidav et Rabbi Preda bameh arachta yamim. What's a mitzvah that you attribute length of days to that you feel especially proud of? Amar lahem, he said to them, mi amai lo kidamni adam lebeit hamidrash. In my whole life, no one ever beat me to the Beit Hamidrash. I was always the first guy there, and that's a big accomplishment. Top of Chaf Chet Amud Aleph, v'lo beirachti lifnei kohen, and I never made the bracha for Birkat Hamazon. So you know, whether that means the zimun or the actual benching, because in some places they used to bench out loud. So he says, I never bench without offering that honor to the kohen instead. And the third one, v'lo achalti mi behemah shelo hurmu matnotel. I never ate from an animal that had not had the matnot kahuna, the special gifts that were supposed to be given to the Kohen. So two of those are related to the kahuna. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yitzchak said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Asur le'echol mi behema shelo hormu matnoteha. It's forbidden to eat from an animal whose the portions that are supposed to be given to the Kohen have not been given to the Kohen. Of course, the problem is, again, if that's really a question of what's permitted and forbidden, he shouldn't be especially proud that he followed the law. So the next line, from Rabbi Yitzchak said, "Kala ochel mi behema shelo hurmuk matnoteha." Anyone who eats from an animal whose parts have not been given to the kohanim, ki ilu ochel tvalim, it's as if they ate tevel, that is fruit that didn't have tithing taken from it. V'lei tilchat hakavati, but the halacha is not like them. In other words, it's not absolutely required by law to wait until the matnot kahuna are given in order to eat from the animal. And yet, he was especially scrupulous not to do it. That's how he showed that it was a special mitzvah. And then, v'lo birachti lifnei kohen, I never made the blessing and benched instead of offering it to a kohen. Lememra, you're trying to say, d'mal yutahi, that this is a good thing. But not, I'm not sure that it's a good thing. V'ham Rabbi Yochanan, but didn't Rabbi Yochanan say, kol tamid chacham shemevarech lefanav? Any tamid chacham, if you're a sage, and you let someone bench in front of you, afilu kohen gadol, even if he is a high priest, am haaretz, but he's an ignoramus, he's not learned, Oto Talmud Chacham, that Talmud Chacham, Chayiv Mita. He's liable for death. It is not respectful to allow an ignoramus to lead the benching instead of a scholar. Shenemar, as it says, Kol Misanai, all those who hate me, this is in the words of the Torah, Ahavu Mavet, they love death. Al Tikre Misanai, don't read those who hate me, as those who hate the Torah, Ela Masnie, they cause others to hate me. So by allowing people who are not ra'ui, appropriate, to lead the benching, it will lead to a disrespect for benching and disrespect for the Talmidei Chachamim. So you're not supposed to do this. So how is it possible that he always let the Kohen bench? What if the Kohen was an ignoramus? Then it's not a positive thing, it's a negative thing. So the Gemara answers, Ki ka'amar ihu b'shavin. What Rabbi Prater was talking about is for someone who was not really an Am Haaretz, he wasn't an ignoramus, but someone who was equal to his learning. Now this is unlikely because Rabbi Prater was one of the greatest scholars in the world. So possibly what it means, or most very likely what it means, is that as long as a person was a little bit learned, Rabbi Prater considered them as if they were his equal in learning, and therefore he deferred to them as a Kohen to lead the benching. Not that they actually were in his ballpark exactly, but if they were even a little learned, he considered them as if they were his equals. And since they were not completely ignoramuses, it did not cause any bizayon to the Torah. It didn't cause any real denigration, and it wasn't an embarrassment. But he was being humble by offering it to them and accentuating their kahuna over his potentially greater learning. Okay, we'll stop there and continue on our next recording. Have a wonderful day.